Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, the Lakers finally beat good teams. How about that? I thought that was impossible.
Man, so ridiculous. They're 19. We're a quarter of a way through the season. Like, no, this is coming. Bro, this team's really good. They're really, really good. They are so athletically gifted that it's sometimes it's like JV practicing against VAR. Like, they're so much bigger, faster, stronger in the front court, especially, that it's so much freaking fun to watch. And Anthony Davis, oh my God, just defensively, I've never seen a season like this game to game. Like, this is on pace to be the best defensive season of my lifetime in Lakers history. It's one thing to watch it from afar with another team, but on a night-to-night basis, that dude's athletic gifts, along with his motor, are you kidding me? Just
the,
like
the play he made on Bogdanović. There you go. I don't know why I went. Marjanovic is Boban, right? Boban's out here shooting threes. No, but Bogdanović, the play that Davis made on Bogdanović is one of the more insane plays you will ever see in basketball. He flew by him. So first, to get him out of a shooting rhythm in the first place, right, to force him to put the ball on the ground, take his eyes away from the basket, and then also get back into the play and actually not just contest the shot, but actually block the shot and do so cleanly without breaking any bones. That was insane. That was incredible.
Try like jumping as far or whatever as far is for you.
I just landed.
And then jumping a second time after you land with all that force and not having your knee shoot across the room in a bloody mess. Like, that was unbelievable.
So we're going to have a little bit of fun. There are a couple notes that I kind of noticed from the game that I want to run by Pete. And then we are going to answer your questions as we continue to catch up from the long weekend and from how everything has gone this week. We've had a couple fun guests. If you guys want to go back and listen to shows, we had Matt Moore on earlier this week. Then we had George Sedano on yesterday's show. Both of those were really fun conversations. I want to start, Pete, with the bench. Because as special as LeBron and Davis were yesterday, and they were dominant, you know, Davis goes 9 of 11 from the floor against a team that features the defensive player of the year last year at his own position. And then LeBron did LeBron things, going so far as to piss off the Utah Jazz broadcasters. I've rarely been so, I guess, annoyed just from like that was the worst take you could possibly have. Like, anywho, but I want to talk about the bench because even while they weren't necessarily shooting all that well from the floor, you saw across the bench unit plus 22s and plus 23s and plus 15s as impact players. And the defense, when those guys were out there, we're talking about Kyle Kuzma and Rajon Rondo. The defense, while they were out there, was suffocating. It was incredible.
How long does Rondo have to play like this for you and I to have a conversation about him?
Like 3 years.
3 years? Yeah, no. You're not ready for this? No? Okay.
No.
All right. I'll check back in a couple weeks.
All right. I've been thinking about this because I've been waiting. I've been waiting for the opportunity to eat some crow. When we were talking about Rajon Rondo playing, I said if he is open to and is willing to take open three-pointers and make them at a decent clip so that he keeps the offense or the opposing defense honest, then it could work out. And the stuff that he does on defense, like I still think that's going to be something that like the defense is worse with him on the court.
So he's still a bad defender. Even with whatever argument you want to make for him, like he's still a bad defender. He makes some rotations where he'll just like leave his guy all alone. There's like 6 seconds left on the shot clock and he's like, oh, I'm going to go double team this guy on the wing, not even in the poster. And it's like, what are you doing?
Right.
But yes. So yes, I'm with you on that.
But like this version of Rondo was the version of Rondo that I thought I always said, if this is going to work, this is how it has to look like. And I, you know, I'll happily eat crow just like I do every time I think something is not going to go well, and then it does go well. I'm happy to say that I was wrong to this point. I still think we're dealing with some outlier stuff and some small sample size stuff. The LeBron and Rondo, I think they're like a plus 17 right now in net rating. I think that's there's some small sample size theater going on there. But again, like if this is how it was, if we knew all along that this was the version of Rondo that the Lakers were going to get, then I would have had much less problem with the idea of him playing an outsized role.
Oh, absolutely. And look, he's not going to shoot 48% or whatever he is from three. Yes, that LeBron Rondo combo is probably not going to be a plus 17 net rating, mm-hmm. but it's also not, you know, a minus six yeah. like it was last year, like the only guy to be a negative on the court with LeBron. I really think Rondo after Christmas, you know, when he broke his hand and when he came back, the season was a disaster with the whole trade deadline fiasco and all that. I really think he just checked out. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that that's an admirable quality or defensible or anything like that. But I also don't think it's necessarily representative of the type of guy that he can be.
The player he is. Maybe right. the guy he is, but the player.
Yeah, there you go. Good point. That's not necessarily representative of the player that he is when there's some stakes on the table. Now, is it possible if things go sideways later and Rondo is one of the first guys to check out? And absolutely. That's how he's reacted in multiple situations. But on this type of team that's playing for something that gets along, that's good, that's looking to try to win an NBA title, I think we're getting a different guy than we got last year.
Yeah. It's inarguable. They literally are. There is nothing I could say to the contrary there. Let's take another quick second. Actually, no, we have a couple minutes here. Can we just, like, kind of laugh at how good a defender, an NBA defender, Alex Caruso is?
Dude, there's so many good defenders. Like, bro, they've got...
They have this guy Caruso, who was in the G League playing behind the aforementioned Rajon Rondo and Tyler Ennis, and was an undrafted dude who comes out of nowhere. And I'm not kidding. If he got the requisite minutes, he would be in the conversation for best point guard defenders in the NBA.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he already is. He already is in that conversation, right? And so having the best defensive player in the NBA, mm-hmm. having a three-time defensive player of the year on your team, mm-hmm. feeling somewhat healthy, and he's not ancient. Dwight's like, what, 33,
yeah.
34? And then having a guard, and Avery Bradley's hurt too, man.
Yeah.
And oh, yeah, you remember Danny Green?
Yeah.
He's one of the best, like, help defenders in the mm-hmm. NBA. This team's insane on the defensive end, man.
And a checked in LeBron.
Yes. Yeah, man. No, so much fun.
It's a really fun team to watch. The last two games especially were a lot of fun because, and yes, like, there was some backlash when I said, you know, I put out that Baby Yoda, the Laker Baby Yoda. Did you see the picture that I threw out there on Twitter?
I did not.
It's adorable, for one thing. I just was looking for a reason to throw it out there, and I said I was looking for all the strength of schedule takes that we've been waiting for all season, and you know, apparently puffing our chests out when you go and sweep the altitude back to back is not something Lakers fans should be doing. But overall,
there's going to be so much whining this year. Just yeah. Just delight in it, man. Like, yeah. They're going to be like that. They're going to find every way to whine and bitch and moan mm-hmm. and just laugh at them every single time you can.
Well, now we're finding out that the Jazz and the Nuggets aren't actually good.
Yeah, of course. That's especially at home, right? Like, they're historically awful.
They were fucking home team, 8-1 going into yesterday's game. They're actually bad, though. They're actually...
I just shake my head, man.
All right, let's take a quick second here. When we come back, we have a MyBookie bet to get to. We have a bunch of questions to still get to. So plenty of stuff ahead of you for the rest of the show. Today's show is brought to you in part by MyBookie. Head on over to MyBookie.ag, use the promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and double your initial investment into the application. Today's MyBookie bet of the day, the Lakers, by the time you guys are listening to this, will be in action this evening. They are right now favored by 3.5 points in Portland, making them 6.5 point favorites overall.
So... I'm taking the Lakers in that one, man. Like, look, Portland's playing better. Carmelo Anthony's contributing to some degree. It's a bad year for you, Anthony. You got Rondo and Carmelo Anthony, you know, balling out early on. Actually, Melo's had like 3 or 4 good games. So yeah. we will see. They're not going to play bad teams every night. But I am taking the Lakers on that because they give up so many points in the front court, Portland does, against, and we were just talking about how athletically gifted and how dominant the Lakers front court is. Rashawn Holmes just put up 28-10 on them. Bielitsa was 17-7-4. They're just not going to be able to handle the Lakers' size in the front court. I think the Lakers are rolling right now and want to make a statement around the league. They've heard all the strength of schedule BS, and they want to, you know, make a statement. So I think the Lakers win handily in Portland, which is really, now that I think of it, after watching Lakers for, you know, 35 plus years.
I was just going to say.
That's dangerous, brother. Yeah, you have a different, do you believe in those demons?
I'm still a little nervous. Like, we've seen the Lakers suck in Portland for far too long to be confident and put money on them in that situation. I do agree, like, on a basketball level, everything you said is right. Hassan Whiteside is about as bad a matchup for Anthony Davis as you can find because of how immobile and how little he cares about anything other than his own counting stats. On the wing, Portland doesn't really offer anything to slow down LeBron. And if the player that they are offering up is Carmelo Anthony, then my takes about Carmelo Anthony are about to look a lot smarter. And there's just, like you said, the Lakers are also rolling and they probably want to keep this thing going. All that said, the Lakers being favored in Portland makes me nervous. I would probably stay away from this. This is one of those, because I even saw your face where I told you they're favored by only 3.5. And you're like, only 3.5? It feels like one of those trap games that I would probably stay away from. So, you know what? Just to have a little bit of fun here, I'll take Portland and you take the Lakers.
Sounds good.
All right, we'll put that on the board. Again, that's mybookie.ag. Head on over there to not just make your bets and whatever bets that you want to make across their entire platform, but they get you your money fast, and that's the entire point here. So again, that's mybookie.ag. Use the promo code LockedOnNBA. MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Before we get to the questions, I want to throw out a theory at you for something.
Okay.
So the Lakers very clearly wanted to send a bit of a message, not just over the last two games. You know, Denver was, I thought they kind of cruised for portions of Denver. Utah, they really, it's one thing to score as well as they do, and then to also lock up the way that they did. That tells me that the Lakers collectively kind of said, no, we're coming out and we're stomping if possible here. And I kind of wonder how much that has to do with how badly Anthony Davis seems to want Defensive Player of the Year and the fact that they're going against the reigning Defensive Player of the Year in Rudy Gobert. So I kind of wonder if that was a collective, like, no, man, we're going to clown this dude tonight specifically. And they did. Mission accomplished.
I think that type of stuff, we always talk about the grind and marathon of 82 games, finding different reasons to motivate yourself and your team for that particular night. That's one of the tricks to being a really good team. And I think you're probably spot on with that, right? Like, he's somebody that's going to get, you know, consideration for that award. And AD just looked, I mean, Gobert is wonderful. He's such a good defender. He can't do what AD can do on the perimeter. That closeout and recovery, there's one person in basketball who can do that. Maybe two with Giannis. Maybe. It's not even close. And of course, yes. Yeah. It goes without saying.
Yeah, it was something that kind of struck me after the game, and I wound up tweeting about it this morning. And that's really what it comes down to is, and I really think it speaks to the level of camaraderie across this roster. Like, they seem to really enjoy playing together. Dwight has talked about it on multiple occasions. One thing that really stands out to me, and Mike Trudell noted this when he was talking to Danny Green about the way that the team is playing, and that Green went out of his way to talk about KCP and how that tells that told Trudell, and the takeaway he had from that was, no, they all collectively want to pick each other up when they have to. And over the last like three or four games, KCP has shot like 15% from three. So I just think there's a lot, not just in terms of the basketball skill element that we're talking about here, that we talked about in the first segment, but it's also how they make each other better off of the court and continue to push each other on it. And I thought last night's blowout of Utah was a great example of that.
Yeah, it's so fun to see such high-level athletes really motivated. And this, you know, there can always be an injury that changes this at some point, knock on wood, but this feels like a magical year, man. Like I keep saying how much fun it is, but I'm like shaking my head half the day watching tape, and not just like the stuff on the court, but the off the court stuff, right? Like the way that they get along, that plays into what you're talking about motivating each other. Like it's the having fun, but part of having fun in this environment is being really competitive and pushing each other. And so it just like this season is feeding my basketball soul like no other, man.
Yeah. I'm not going to go so far as to say this is definitely or definitively what went on last night, but Kuzma getting those two blocks late in the fourth quarter or three blocks late in the fourth quarter feels like the kind of thing that can get him to turn a corner in terms of the overall competitiveness that I think he's kind of failed to or struggled at least to match up to.
Yeah, one of the things that he does has done in the past has been kind of conceding shots around the rim as to not pick up a foul or for whatever reason.
Not get posterized.
Right, not get posterized, not wanting contact. So a guy like him making the effort to do that and then seeing his teammates lose their mind. Like we all react to positive reinforcement, right? To somebody being like, you know, somebody you respect being really excited for some great thing that you did. And what does that make you want to do? Makes you want to do it again,
more
right?
Of it. Yep.
That's right. And so that when you're talking about pushing teammates, especially with a young guy like that, seeing LeBron and Dwight and KCP and JaVale and everybody just going crazy on the bench for him doing that, man, that's going to only motivate him to do that more.
Yep. All right. Let's start to answer these questions. This made me laugh as I was reading it this morning. Pete, your analysis is unmatched. You are truly a gift to us Lakers fans. Also love your work on this podcast. Anthony, you're on this pod too. Has Dwight Howard ever committed a foul? Every game, after every foul call against Dwight, I check his reaction to see if he ever agrees with the call, and he never does. Have you noticed the same thing?
Yes. There's some times, man, where during the game or when I'm watching tape where I'm like, Dwight, come on, man, really?
Yeah.
Like, save some of those so that at some point a ref's going to take you seriously and listen to you when you actually don't commit a foul and you get called for it. But he's been like that his whole career. But yes, I certainly notice that.
I kind of think he's gotten kind of a tough call this year. A tough whistle this year. He's gotten a lot of ticky-tack calls and whatever. I actually don't mind some of the foul trouble that he gets because a lot of the fouls that he commits are foul that they are committed to gain an advantage. It's not like a reaching foul 90 feet from the basket. It's sticking your hip out a little too far on a screen or trying a little too physically to get an offensive rebound. That stuff doesn't bother me at all. It's when I see the stupid kind of reach in fouls from a big out on the perimeter. That's when I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah, no, those are the ones he needs to cut out. But he is the Lakers' physical enforcer because as great as Anthony Davis is, the way that he's physically overwhelming is more athletically than like bully you. But Dwight is that. Dwight will push you around. So the combination of the two, what an unpleasant pair to have to go up against. But yeah, those like 35 feet away from the rim. And then he complains about it. Come on, Dwight.
Yeah. All right. Garrett 0331 writes, which LeBron team would you and Pete take this year if they were representing the Lakers in the 2020 playoffs? The 19-20 Lakers, the 15-16 Cavs, or any of the 10-14 Heat teams? In other words, is this LeBron's best team? Personally, I think this year's Lakers would be the best team.
That's a really interesting argument. I would probably take the 2012 Miami Heat roster, maybe the 13 team, one of those back-to-back teams over mm-hmm. this one. But I do think that this is a better team than the Cavs team that he won a championship with. What remains to be seen is how much does it matter to have another guy who you can give the ball to and create from the perimeter like Kyrie?
Yeah.
Or is the two-man game of AD and LeBron enough? Right. And yeah. in a way that, like, you don't necessarily give the ball to AD 20 feet from the rim and say, go to work. And when you do, it's not terribly successful. Whereas with Kyrie, you know, you have that. So in a playoff series, how much does that matter? So it's still possible that that Cavs team is a better team than this one. But I, for now, I'm going to take this Lakers squad.
It's a little early for me to give this take. You're talking about 20 games versus 200 games that he played with Cleveland or whatever. So, in however many games he played with Miami. So I think it's a little too early for me to count this team or compare this team to any of those other ones. I will say that this team has as high a ceiling as any of those teams, just because Davis is LeBron's best teammate. And not only is he LeBron's best teammate, but he makes LeBron better, and LeBron makes Davis better in ways that, you know, LeBron and Wade took turns, and LeBron and Kyrie took turns. So I think that's something to take into account. The flip side to that take, though, is that I trusted some of the role players on those previous teams, the Kyle Korvers, even J.R. Smith before he started throwing soup at coaches. Like, I trusted some of those role players. Mike Miller comes to mind as well. A little bit more than I trust some of these role players. Danny Green's a legitimate one. I wish the Lakers had another player who I trusted as much as I trust Danny Green.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. And time will tell. I think we're off to as good of a start as we could possibly hope for, though.
Absolutely. Let's go. Let's take another quick second here. When we come back, we're going to try to race through. Well, I think we're on pace. We could take our time. So we'll come back and answer your guys' questions. All right, so Johnny Dye writes, hey, Anthony, love the show. Now you had gotten me thinking about how to say the Lakers are X games above 500, too. I believe the guy who corrected you was right. After you subtract losses from wins, you divide by two, for example, blah, blah, blah. Here's the thing, though. In all of math, you divide before you subtract anyway. So, like, I don't think that would work here.
So the Lakers are 19-3 right now. How many games would they have to lose to be 500?
See, now I have to do math. I don't want to do math. They'd have 16.
That's right.
Yeah.
Therefore, in my mind, yeah, like, he may be technically correct.
Yeah.
But there are 16 games above 500 in my mind.
I like the idea of just having to subtract. I'm not interested in adding another level of math to what I'm talking about here when I'm just calculating something as easy as record above 500.
Stupid analytics.
Exactly. You're now nice of Charles Barkley to make an appearance on the show. By Magic writes, thanks for taking your time and answering my question. What's your favorite away stadium you like to go to or want to go to while the Lakers are playing there? For me, it's in Portland, but I haven't experienced many stadiums. Well, if we're counting stadiums, I'm counting the Padres Stadium down in San Diego.
How about places where NBA teams play?
NBA teams should play in the Padres Stadium in San Diego. It's so cool. Have you ever been there?
I've been to Qualcomm before, but that closed years ago,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's Petco Park now. And okay. For one thing, they have a big grassy area where you could take dogs. I think that's really cool.
That is cool.
And then it's also nestled in the heart of downtown. So the skyscrapers that are around it, if you go up to any of the top levels of those bars, and most of them have bars up on the roofs, you can sit there and watch the game from like a rooftop bar too.
Oh, that's super cool.
And then you're in San Diego, which is one of the best cities, in my opinion, in America. And if you're going to a game late enough, as you're sitting out there on the roof, you look out to the west and you've got the sun setting over the ocean as you're watching a game. The lights kind of just turn on, so you start to see some of that. So it's awesome. In terms of away stadiums, I have never been to an away Lakers game. Have you?
Now that I think of it, no, I haven't. I would love to – actually, no, I have. I went to the Pelicans game last year. Yeah. I would love to go to a game at Madison Square Garden.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually trying to do that last year, but they do not credential. The Knicks are such a mess on so many levels.
Yeah.
Like they don't credential like SB Nation blogs mm-hmm. or any blogs at all because
they're like the all only the TV blogs are all the blogs because shit they kill on James Dolan every day. Yeah.
That's a good point, but it's not like the, you know, regular media, although they've tried to pull credentials from regular media, right?
They did.
They're just a mess. Anyway, Madison Square Garden, I don't buy all of the mecca of basketball stuff. I kind of bristle at that. That said, I do want to watch a Laker game at MSG.
I would like to go up to Portland. I actually base this more off of city than arena because, like, let's be honest, they're all basketball arenas. They're all the same thing. It's not like baseball where you go to Wrigley Field and it's a completely different experience from Fenway Park or whatever.
I don't know, man. Like that Pelicans arena is, it's rough, man. Yeah. Like they care more about football. It is literally right next to the Superdome or whatever they call it these days. And it is like the escalators went out and like the media room was like a fold out chair.
You know what makes up for that completely?
What?
The city of New Orleans. It's an incredible city. The city of New Orleans is
freaking awesome. Yes. Yeah. That arena, not so much.
Yeah.
So I would put that in. And honestly, like people have mixed opinions on Staples Center. People who like go to every game, in that, like some
it's
people feel
soulless.
That it's, yeah, that it's kind of close to being not obsolete is probably a strong term, but it's getting in there. And it was one of the last of the like last generation of arenas to be built, and kind of the newer ones are a lot cooler. So I'm curious if Staples is 20 years old this year. I'm curious how long they go with that, or if they do any renovations or anything like that. What would you? This is off track, but what would you like to see different at Staples Center?
I want more Lakers stuff. Like when you're walking around the hallways and it's a lot of like reds and blues and it doesn't really necessarily feel like the home of the Lakers. It's the arena the Lakers play in, but it doesn't feel like the home of the Lakers in the same way that, you know, like the Boston Garden is going to feel like the home of the Celtics, and MSG is the home of the Knicks. Back in the day, the Forum was the home of the Lakers, and that was their building. I would like to see. And then the other thing too, LA is one of the coolest food areas in the nation. I think they can up the kind of the caliber of food. You're paying $37 for a beer anyway. At least like give me a nice, you know, meal to go with that beer.
Yeah, that's my big thing is I think the food options could be significantly better. And I'd love to see them loosen up on the game ops a little bit as well. However, that's a little bit different than Staples. And LA Live's awesome. I've always liked LA Live. So, I would love to see them kind of improve the food options around there.
Yep. All right. Let's go with KS Fantastic. I'm just here to request both of your opinions on Danny Ainge's comments on the Lakers in that interview with Rachel Nichols. There's a smiley face here. Grabs popcorn. P.S. Pineapple on pizza is glorious.
Mm.
So this guy it wants to shit on Danny Ainge, and you're not allowed to. I mean, if you disagree with his take on pizza, that means you're pro Danny Ainge.
So I'm supposed to comment on.
Yeah, him. did you see the clip? I think Darius quote tweeted it. And
oh, I saw it. I consume Celtic slander content. Like I don't listen to much of in the way of other podcasts or things like that. If there's something slandering the Celtics on the timeline that I have not created myself, I am definitely watching that.
Yeah.
So yes, I watched every second of that a couple of times. It was glorious. It was just so Danny Ainge.
Yeah.
And what's great is that he's like good enough to keep his job for a really long time, mm-hmm. but doesn't get it enough to like we gave up a lot for Anthony Davis. Do we see now like the value of having a second superstar?
Yeah.
Like how you do anything that you can to get a second superstar, because everything else has a way of falling into place because that trumps everything.
Yeah.
And so Danny Ainge's lack of – like that was such a blown opportunity when they made that Brooklyn trade and had all of these assets. They get themselves a pretty good coach in Brad Stevens, but who's also has a similar weakness in not being able to like, you know, manage superstar. Right, yeah. And so that's why I always make fun of them as the gritty sixth seed that they have always wanted, because it's all these guys that all the Marcus Smarts and Jaylen Browns and Jason Tatums, aren't they swell? And they're good players. They are good players. They're not superstars. Mm-hmm. And that's what historically has won titles, unless you have a bunch of really good players like a Pistons team, or you get super hot like the Mavericks did. And you know, Dirk was playing superstar. I mean, Dirk was a superstar, but he was playing the best basketball of his career. You know, but by and large, man, Jaylen Brown for Kawhi Leonard, hell yeah, you'd do that.
Yeah.
Or Paul George or Jimmy Butler or any of the guys they had the opportunity at. And then they've been trying to get Anthony Davis for years, and we're the team that actually gets them. Like, God, man, just shoot that right into my veins.
The smile that he had at the end of that clip, where it was just like the dead-eyed smile.
Yeah, 1,000 yards there.
You can actually see the bubble above his head where he's like literally kicking his own ass.
So great.
That's what I'm here for. Here's my thing. Danny Ainge played in the era where it was solidified. Like the Bird Magic dynamic saved the NBA, right? You would think anybody who was directly involved with that rivalry would understand what it is that superstars mean to the NBA.
What if you're a role player in that exact dynamic?
He was just, he's Uncle Rico-ing himself. Like,
you are
I just
super important in the whole process. That's my theory.
Oh, man. Give me all the Danny Ainge slander always. All right, let's go one more question here. Fontaine Love writes, hey guys, love the show. Someone asked a question about Ujiri and you all brought up Giannis. Is having his brother on the roster a simple play to have a better chance at him down the road? Yes. I don't see us keeping Kostas around until Giannis is a free agent in 2021, but maybe he requests a trade early next season if the Bucks don't meet expectations in the postseason.
Yeah, I think that's possible. I think Kostas is around for as long as the Lakers have a shot at Giannis, and who knows if they do. I think the Lakers have an outside shot at him. I would be pleasantly surprised if he came to the Lakers, but if the cost of that is a two-way deal in which you get an opportunity, like Kostas is going to talk to Giannis about the experience, right? And it's incumbent upon the Lakers to make it a pleasant one, not just for Kostas, but just in general. Like why do players want to come to the Lakers? It's because of the massive opportunities off of the court, the glory that like AD, if AD,
the way that they treat the superstars, way that they
treat superstars and all of that. So if you can get Kostas in, you know, advocating for the Lakers over these 2 years, like that's a big win, man. And that's worth one of the two-way spots, even if I think he's an interesting defensive prospect. I think he's a long way away on offense, but he's got something to work with. It's totally worth it to me.
Yeah. I don't have any problem with it whatsoever just because it's a two-way contract. I mean, that said, Alex Caruso was a two-way contract, and there are other guys who have come up and provided or produced for teams that came up that way. So unless you I guess the counter argument to this is keeping Kostas at the mere chance at Giannis worth potentially passing up on one of those other players now that we know that the Lakers can find them? I guess there's something to it, but Giannis is so good that you, just like with Kawhi, Kawhi was so good that you had to wait out and miss opportunities along the way because even knowing how that turned out, I don't regret the way that the Lakers went about that at all.
It's the same thing as I was saying earlier about how this is why you move heaven and earth for superstars. Like you do anything and everything that you can to get a guy like Giannis, to get a guy like Anthony Davis. And hopefully you can keep as much of the other guys that you have, but if you can't, You got to do it because they make that big of a difference. So a two-way deal, like if that means Devontae Kaycock isn't on the roster when he would have been on a two-way otherwise, because he's a better player than Costas is at this point, like, so what?
Yeah. And look, the thing with the Lakers that we have learned more than just about any other franchise, maybe in professional sports, is that once they get that superstar, they understand how to win with said superstar, right? Like, they acquire Kareem, they draft Magic, and they build the team around them. You get Showtime. They sign Shaq, trade for Kobe, they build around those guys, and you get the three-peat. You now have LeBron, and they tried to do the sustainable, you know, youth movement model too, realized that that was not going to work. Trade for Anthony Davis, and now have arguably the best team in the NBA. And, you know, Adam and I were having a conversation partially on Twitter and then off of it. When we were talking about, you know, how many titles would LeBron have won had the Lakers drafted him? And they were able to acquire the superstars that could have been paired with LeBron over the course of his career with more consistency than the Cavs did in either of his stints there. And I think there's something to that. And I think here when it's Giannis, and this might help you acquire that superstar, knowing what the Lakers are capable of with those superstars, you do whatever you possibly can to get said superstar.
Yeah, it makes me feel better about how things ended with the kids. Like, the points about the Lakers maybe being able to keep a little bit more and all of that, those still stand. But the way that this franchise operates is they acquire superstars. It is always built around stars. And the person who runs our team in Jeannie Buss was...
And ready-made superstars.
Yes, too, yes, sir. That's right. Not necessarily drafted. Although the Lakers have drafted guys, but they've been raised alongside superstars, right? So Kobe, they didn't draft Kobe technically, but they had him since he was 17. And he became a superstar, but that was with Shaq, right? And with some all-stars and Ben Exel and Eddie Jones, yada, yada. So that is who the Lakers are, and they aren't going to build a team like Milwaukee from the ground up and then with, you know, filling in the gaps with some smart veteran acquisitions. And I mean, they will do that, but like, that's not how they're going to get their stars. And I am more at peace with that now than I was, say, 6 months ago.
Yep. All right, this was fun. Fun week of shows, fun week of basketball. Let's keep this thing rolling. Again, the Lakers are in Portland, in action. Pete and I are on either side of this bet, so we'll see how that goes. I believe I took down the last bet. I did. I took down the last bet against Pete, so we'll see if Pete can get back to even here.
We're even. I won the first one. I won the first one.
Oh, we are even.
Yeah.
Wait, what was the first one?
I don't know. It was the first My Bookie ad that we did. I'm keeping track of this shit, too. Just...
I don't think so.
No, we did the...
The bets I have on the board, I have Portland will make the playoffs. You have them saying yes. I have me saying no. The one that you did win is that... And there's actually a bet assigned to this, is that Dwight Howard will make it to Christmas. I think
no,
you can go ahead and count that
the
win.
The first My Bookie ad that we did, I'm pretty sure I won that. And then you won the second one.
All right, so I'll go back through my records, too.
No, you won't.
I will not.
Maybe a listener can help settle this debate.
Yep. All right, have a great rest of your weekend. Make somebody else's, and we'll talk to you on Monday.